Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Steve Hossack, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
This is awesome. So we're a long ways apart. You're in the Yukon. I'm in southern British Columbia, not too far from the U.S. border. And you're not too far from the U.S. border. I'm probably closer to it than you are. But
Yeah, we have a couple of Alaskan ports that are pretty nearby.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you done any interviews with Yukoners before?
This is the first time.
There you go.
So this is amazing. I just slowly putting all the pieces through all of our various podcasts with people all over this country. So that's what we're about. So this is awesome.
Awesome.
Well, the topic that I want to get you to share your experiences in is you are part of this program in the Yukon that takes kids out hunting, and specifically on a bison hunt. So this is not like, you know, like you're taking some kids out and showing them how to get a rabbit or a grouse on the side of the road. Like this is serious stuff, like a buffalo hunt, but it's an amazing program. And so I just want you to share everything about, like, explain to people what the program is, how the kids are involved, why you're part of it, what do the kids get out of it. So set the stage for us on this program.
Okay. So a little bit of background. I grew up in Ontario, and the schools that I attended there, you couldn't cross the street without three or four permission slips being signed. And so when I moved up here, I started working in the schools as an educational assistant, did a few different jobs. And so I kind of caught wind of this on the land program, and I was very keen to participate and learn more about it. And one day I was substituting in a grade 7 classroom for the teacher. And one of the students was all excited about this upcoming bison hunt that they had. And I said to them, you know, so what does that look like? You guys go out on the land and, you know, you spot some bison and you go back to camp and head back to the school. And they said, no. Then we go out and we shoot one, we harvest it. And I was like, what? You guys do that? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, okay, well, what does that entail? And so they kind of explained the program to me. And I thought, you know, this is just, it's just wild. It's too incredible. So over the years, I got in touch with a few different people and managed to actually become a volunteer on this program through my job. And, I know a few of the teachers that host one or two of the programs. And amazingly enough, it's not just isolated to one school. This is actually a program that's implemented in various schools, both at sort of an intermediate level and a high school level. So you have students ranging from grade 7 all the way to grade 12 who partake in these activities on the land. And so they're implemented in various areas, and they go for about a week, and you go out and you know, it's the Yukon. It's a winter hunt. The bison hunt here starts in earnest sort of November 1st and runs until March 31st. And it's cold, you know, sometimes it's minus 35, minus 45. And I've got to say, you know, to set the stage, this wouldn't happen without the teachers. The teachers up here really are incredible. They put a ton of time and work into making this happen. Logistically, you know, it's not a small feat. These students are prepping for these trips. You know, they happen sort of the last week of February, early March, which is we start to get longer days coming back. And it's just a nicer time of year than sort of like the end of December, early January. So it's cold. It's the dead of winter. These students have to pack their gear. They have to prep their food. So, I mean, the students are dehydrating meals at school. They're running through gear lists. They're practicing putting up wall tents. And then you have sleds because obviously, you know, it's a big animal and they're hard to access. So you need to sometimes travel a fair amount. Not necessarily too much, but you're moving across the land on a snow machine. So these are all skills between first aid, snow machine training, packing their equipment, prepping their food. These are all things that lead up to this hunt. So there's an incredible amount of work that goes into this behind the scenes before the actual event takes place. And then, you know, you go out on the land for a week, you set up a few wall tents, the kids have a mess hall that they do this all, you know, for the instructors and us volunteers, we kind of sit back and we'll instruct and say, okay, if you're going to split wood, you know, do this, stay safe, to assemble a wood stove. This is how you do it. These are the things that you're going to want to look for. Make sure it's not leaking. This is how you connect a stove pipe into the main part of the wood stove. And they just go. I mean, and it's amazing to see these kids just really take ownership of what it means to be out on the land, but not only on the land in the middle of winter in the Yukon. So it's a really, you know, incredible program. Lots of leadership. The older students kind of take the younger students under their wing and guide them through it. And it's really an amazing thing to watch these students learn and grow. And their comfort level and their confidence. And I think that is one of the things that this program offers that, you know, in my involvement in outdoor education for the last 20 years, I've rarely seen a program that kind of offers this to students in this way. You know, the amount of confidence and motivation that they get, you can watch these students really come out of their shell over the week, you know, on the land. And some of them are a little bit shy at first and they don't really want to get right in there, and that's okay. And after 3 or 4 days, they're, you know, right in there, hands deep and pulling guts out of animals and hanging meat in trees. And it's amazing. It's really an incredible thing to watch.
Holy. So the age groups that you were talking about, they do this together. So you will have younger kids and older kids, or are those separate programs, like a bunch of smaller kids and high school kids are?
Yeah, it depends on the school, but typically they're mixed grades. Sometimes it's a 7-8 class, and sometimes it's high school students that have like a middle school. They call it high school, but they're, you know, sort of grade 7s and 8s that tag along. So it depends on the school and how the program is being implemented. But the ones that I've been on, a few of them at least have been a wide range of grades. And these students all know each other. I mean, they're all peers and family, and they're related, and so they know each other. And then some of them don't, and they, you know, they make friends out there, and they kind of learn to lean on each other and trust each other, and
that's part of it.
Get along and share a tent for a week, and yeah, it's a lot. There's a lot that goes into it. So it's incredible to see that leadership too. Like, I've been fortunate to do it enough years now that I've watched a student go from grade 7 to grade 11 or 12 and go from that very early, very, you know, little experience to having 3 or 4 successful trips under their belt, and then taking that next generation of students on and actually, you know, bringing them under their wing and educating them and making them feel safe and comfortable out there and passing those skills on. So it's an amazing program just to see the students carry on this stuff as well. And the amount of knowledge that they share with each other even.
I mean, great. Some of that's got to transcend like a hunting trip or an outdoor trip too, right? Like, it's just, this is how how a person should be. This is a person's character in life in general. But the learning ground is in a hunting camp. So that's pretty cool. Do you see evidence of that? Like, do you see those same people like really standing out, like at other events or other things, you know, in the school or in life? Or like when you say leaders, are they being leaders of like in all areas?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, just as a few examples, we've got students that are graduates of this program, who have gone on to being sort of junior representative of, you know, the local fish and game association. They partake in the Hunter Education Clinic and help facilitate programming so that, you know, it's tailor-made for a younger audience or a youth audience. You know, they take part in meetings about regulation changes and say, you know, if I'm this age and I don't understand this, and so they really get involved. And more recently, we've seen one of the students who you know, was a participant in this program for several years, is actually training to become a conservation officer. Wow. And she attributes it directly back to this on the land experience of, you know, being around. We're very fortunate. We have First Nation elders from the traditional territories that we're hunting on join us. We have conservation officers, and we typically, depending, you know, there's only one of them, but the hunter education coordinator also comes out and, you know, passes on skills. And it's a very high level of programming. So the students are really busy every day. And they do everything from learning how to make fires in the cold to keeping their body warm, layering, cooking, you know, glassing techniques, moving across the land, stalking an animal. So there's a lot that goes into it. And all these people kind of come together and share their skills. And then the students kind of absorb all of that, because, you know, at that age, you're just a sponge, right? And they take it back and you can see them, you know, sharing it with their peers in schools, because obviously not every student is able to come every year. It's a smaller group, not too small. It's about 10 to 15 students typically. But then they can come back and share that experience and get, you know, their friends all excited about it. And then maybe their friends get to go the next year. And you see them around town and, you know, they've got just different clothing on that they would have had like the week before they went on the bison hunt. You know, they'll be wearing big buddy boots and a winter, you know, ruff, and they're all decked out and ready to go, because they've learned, you know, like if you're going to be on the land and minus 40 for a week, you need the proper gear. So yeah, you really do see that, not only the individuals developing over the course of the week, but they also develop as community members. And I think that's something that, you know, you can't really understate the importance of when it comes to programming like this. Is it really teaches these young adults how to be members of a healthy, thriving community. And I think that that's one of the things that we're very fortunate to have here in the Yukon, is a community that is really close-knit and supportive and well kind of integrated, in the sense that, you know, people can rely on each other. Whether, you know, a car goes into the ditch in the wintertime and, you know, you have a student who's just, I'm gonna go over there and help. They don't even bat an eye. And that's the kind of people that you want to be around, right? Those are the people you want to spend time with and be community members with. So I really do think it helps them develop and flourish into these, you know, thriving young adults. So it's a really cool thing to see.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, do the kids, like, is this an elective program where the kids would apply, or is it mandatory? Are there some kids that are just sort of like, are you kidding me? There's not a chance I'd want to sign up for that course. Do you have more kids wanting in than you can actually take? Like, how does that part work in school?
There is sort of a wait list, if you will. Okay. There's a high demand to get onto these programs, and the teachers do a very good job of allocating who can come and when, and making sure that it's fair. But I mean, there's a lot of responsibility, and so you have to prove yourself, right? So we have some really great outdoor education programming in pretty much all of the schools here, whether it's like a forest school that is just like a dedicated program that you have to apply to be a part of, or the average classroom that just spends more time with outdoor education programming. But some of the teachers that run it are involved with those specific outdoor education programs. And they, you know, obviously bring a world of experience with not only their personal experiences, but also bringing students on the land and how to do that safely and appropriately. But Yeah, you get, you know, 12 to 15 students. There's probably, I don't know, I would reckon 50 of them apply every year. So not everybody can make it. And the students have to be kind of on their best behavior throughout the school year. I don't spend that much time in the classrooms anymore, but I know that, you know, they've got to prove themselves throughout the year that this is something that they're mature enough to handle. And so when you think of, you know, grade sevens or grade eights, you know, they're really stepping up to the plate. It's a big endeavor, and you have this amazing breadth of experience too. Like you'll be talking to a student and his dad's a trapper or an outfitter, or, you know, his mom's a taxidermist, or, you know, you'll be talking to another student and she's never been on a camping trip before. So you have this huge range of world experiences that come together. And that's where I think the kids, the students themselves make these amazing connections and can really help each other out. You know, last year, the year before, we were just kind of doing some chores around camp and walking around. And I turned over and there was a son of a taxidermist who was one of the students on the trip. And he was turning out the head from the bison that we had harvested with this tiny little knife. And he was walking through what he was doing with another student who was just kind of sitting there staring like, wow, how are you doing that? And, you know, he was going around the nose and around the eyes and the yep. ears, and he's walking him through, oh, this is what you look for. And when you get to this point, you got to really pull hard and cut here. And I just kind of stopped and looked over and I was like, wow, this is incredible. Like the amount of knowledge that's transmitted, whether it's from a leader or a volunteer down to the student or just from student to student. Yeah, it's just an incredible, incredible thing. And I've done outdoor education stuff for, yeah, about 20 years now. And, I've never seen a program that even comes close to touching what this does.
This sounds like nothing I've ever heard of. That is so cool. And there's also the thing with kids, like when you're dealing with an animal, my kids were like this and like you get an animal and you're breaking it down. Like you said, you're skinning out the head. Maybe you're going to keep the skull or whatever, like you got to clean it up. But there's so much more to hunting than, you know, just killing that animal and having meat in the freezer. There's this whole entire process of like, hey, what's this? This is fat around the stomach. It's insulation because that's, you know, this how these animals stay alive. This is a kidney. This is a liver. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Like, these are what lungs look like. Yep, they're exactly pretty much the same thing that's in your body, smaller, an eyeball, an actual cornea. There's the cornea. That's the lens. This is the thing that helps you focus. Like, there's all that stuff that, you know, there's some kids are like, oh my God, you know, whatever. But kids just seem like you said, they're a sponge. They want to soak this up. And it's like any kid that you've had involved in hunting, when it comes to like the gutting and skinning part, that's where they're just right in there going, oh my God, look at this. And that is so valuable, even just to understand our own bodies, to understand another mammal.
Right. And the other subjects, I guess, that come into this, you know, whether it's biology or chemistry or environmental sciences, you know, understanding the heritage and tradition, the First Nation cultures and values. I mean, this program ties these things together. And if anybody ever listens to this that is sort of in charge of the Department of Education, please don't ever stop supporting this program. I mean, it's so valuable. You can't put a value on what this does. You know, we see students when we do harvest an animal and we're fortunate enough, they kind of stand around and they thank the animal and they, you know, walk through a whole process around, you know, giving value and honoring that life. And then, like you said, they're right in there and they're helping to skin and gut and quarter and dress the animal out. And they're learning about the anatomy and they're learning about the biology and the adaptation, the evolutionary, you know, features that it has to survive in these areas. So they're looking at the hooves and they're looking at the bones and wow, look how big this bone is. And we, a couple of years ago, harvested a bison on one of these trips and we took the eyeball apart. And like you were saying, we looked at the lens and held it up and the whole world is upside down in this little crystal ball. You know, and the fascination and the questions that came out of that with these students, it was just like, they were just mind blown. Like, well, what do you mean? Why is it upside down? And why is it look like this? And yeah. It's so soft. And I didn't realize it would feel like that. And you kind of passed it around and you could just tell like their fascination with the natural world and being connected to the natural world was just so heightened. And you can't really mimic that in a classroom, you know, like even if you're interested in these subjects and you break down a fetal pig or something. I mean, it's interesting and it's maybe a bit smelly, but like when you harvest an animal and then the kids take it back to their gymnasium and a local butcher comes in and they break down every part of that animal, they package it, they share it with the other students. They have a giant school feast and then they take some of that meat home and put it in the freezer. I mean, that's a life lesson that you just can't replicate. Like there's no other educational space where a student goes from being so timid or unaware of what's happening through to that end result of I'm a self-confident, enabled human being who can not only live with the land, but survive on the land and understand it. And I think, you know, in terms of creating a connection to our environment, there's no greater value. To see that next generation of students kind of coming up, it gives me so much hope and appreciation for what they are capable of doing and what I see them as looking to do. You know, some of the things that create barriers, you know, for older generations of people, whether it's social or whatever, these preconceived notions that we carry, they just break them down.
Yeah.
And they work together as a group, you know, and it's just so amazing to see.
Wow.
So, I mean, yeah, it's like you're saying, it's this life lesson that's facilitated through this amazing hunting program, but really it's just like a microcosm of what life is about.
Yeah. That's exactly what's going through my head. It's just sort of like everything you're talking about. It's just sort of like, yeah, that's, you know, that's life outside of a hunting camp. It's just sometimes in hunting camp, there's a little bit more imperative to things. Like, you know, if someone's screwing around and it's getting dark and the wood stove pipe isn't hooked up, like somebody's like, hey, priorities here, put that down and get your butt over here and, you know, start hooking these pipes together. Like, you know, sometimes those things aren't, you know, quite like that in, you know, in real life. But, you know, if you got a group of people trying to do something and somebody's sitting on their butt and they're not pulling their weight, it's more noticeable and it's easier to say, look, man, like, you know, we need some help. Someone's got to do the dishes or whatever. And then you go home, you know, those kids are at home and their siblings sitting on the couch. Like all of a sudden it's like, hey, you know, get your ass over here.
Pull your weight. Yeah.
So
yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you know, the students, they do a really good job bringing each other up, right? And carrying each other and supporting each other. And like you're saying around camp, you know, those things are so important because every little thing kind of scaffolds, you know, to something else. So whether it's, we get in there, you know, we've got to set up a camp and the days are fairly short still, even though they're longer than they are sort of in December and January, when we'd run this program in late February, early March. But, you have a limited window. And so they're learning these time constraints and these responsibilities. And yeah, some students might be hesitant to get right involved at the beginning, but through encouragement and within their peers even, and it's sort of like a challenge by choice thing where, you know, if it's obviously the chores, everyone kind of partakes in them, but if it's a bigger exercise, you know, you can stand back and watch and see if you're comfortable. And with that encouragement and support from their peers, like by the end of the week, they're right in there. And there's nobody sitting around while others people are splitting wood and making fires and cooking dinner and cleaning dishes and, you know, drying gear and making sure that everything's, you know, airtight for the morning. By the end of that week, they're all firing on every cylinder. They're just going.
Yeah.
They don't stop. It's like a little beehive. And they're going over here and they're making sure this is clean. And they're going over here and they're making sure that that's ready for tomorrow. And oh, maybe so-and-so forgot to hang their jacket up to dry. So I'm just going to go over there and do it for them. And, you know, again, I mean, that's it. I think these things ripple through into their life in ways that I don't think any of us can really put a pin on, but you know, it's so valuable for the students to have that sense of responsibility and ownership, and the skills that they know that they have it, they have what it takes, you know, maybe something that might be a little daunting to them. That's maybe not a huge task. Once they've gone through this, I mean, you see 13 hands or 13 sets of hands, like in the middle of pulling an animal apart, and nobody's nicking each other with a knife and everybody's being safe and they're all communicating clearly. And it's like, yeah, these kids are, they're ready. They're ready for it. Whatever challenges they face in the future, whether it's on the land or not, whether it's in a workplace or in a social setting, they have these fundamental skills that are going to guide them through the rest of their life.
That's amazing. And I think that's, and that's coming from one of the things, hunting, learning to hunt.
Yeah.
It almost sounds kind of like the ultimate finishing school, like, you know, that was a big thing in, you know, the previous century was, you know, kids got sent to finishing schools to know which fork to use on the fancy dinner plates and stuff. But this is like, the ultimate life finishing school.
Yeah.
You know, there's another, I don't know if you've seen this or not. So one of the criticisms about hunting, like people that don't understand it, is hunters hunt because they have a thrill of killing, right? It's just like, you know, like we're imbalanced, we're psychos. We just like to kill things. And our response is like, if you knew how hard all of this was to achieve all of this, just to take an animal's life, there's easier ways to do it. I could stay home, not spend as much money and just buy mice at the pet store or whatever. And, you know, and do whatever I wanted to them. Like, so that part of it, you know, never, you know, sort of washes, but I've experienced this. I've seen this with my kids. When they learn to hunt and they're part of taking an animal's life, there's that respect and honor in how it's treated, that builds an ethic where you don't see those kids, or I've never seen my kids wanting to shoot birds with a BB gun outside. They're not picking up salamanders and putting them in Tupperware containers and then forgetting about them in the baking sun in the summertime, and the poor thing fries to death, or, you know, pulling wings off bugs or whatever. It's like there's this level of respect for life that almost becomes a level that's higher, a higher standard than people that aren't hunters. And have you seen any of that kind of like in kids where they think about life outside of the hunting thing a little bit differently?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the Yukon's such an amazing place for this exact reason, but there's a Renewable Resources Council up here, and they created a bumper sticker years ago, and it goes something like, you know, kids who hunt, fish, and trap don't beat up little old ladies. And it's kind of comical, but it's also, you know, it's one of those things that it resonates. And I mean, it's true. Like these kids, the life lessons and the skills and the values that they learn on this program do carry through. And you see that whether we harvest or not. And this is another, you know, it's an aside, but part of this discussion is that the success of this trip absolutely does not hinge upon harvesting. It's not even a thought. It's always a great thing if we can, for a variety of reasons, you know, the educational experience, the meat that the kids get to bring home. But I've been on a number of these trips where we're not successful in harvesting, and it doesn't change the tone of the program at all.
Interesting.
But you see it when we do harvest, you know, the animal goes down and the students have this like innate draw to show honor to that life, and to show that the animal sacrificed its life to kind of nourish them and keep them healthy and fit and feed their family for the year. And I think that it does carry through. There's this sense of interconnectedness that is learned through these programs. And again, whether or not, you know, it revolves around harvesting an animal or just being on the land. And I think that people bring that back into their community where, you know, they come back and realize like whether you're in a community of a few thousand people or whether you're in a camp of a few dozen people or a dozen people, you need each other and you lean on each other, and everybody brings different skills and values to the table. And those students, you know, you see them come back to the community and sort of honor that realization that, you know, I'm a part of this community and I need to do my bit to make sure that, you know, the community thrives. And so, you know, you see them getting involved in clubs and extracurriculars and volunteering and doing their part to be part of a healthier community. So yeah, I think it does kind of carry through and it is sort of an interesting lesson for them, both out there in the field, but then also when they come back and to see how they, you know, should behave and can, you know, build up a better community around them.
Yeah. So this question here is probably in the minds of listeners as well, you know, just kind of, if you've ever taken kids out hunting, it's like, sometimes it's an outing with kids and not necessarily the way you might hunt by yourself as far as like being quiet and, you know, and all these types of things. So obviously it's the adults in the team that are the licensed hunters with a tag, that do the harvesting. Now, is it like one hunter and like, are the kids going with the hunter? Are they there like seeing the animal shot? Do you split the kids up into like hunter A and hunter B? Like how kind of maybe fill folks in just a little bit on that part of it. Cause I think everybody's going like, I wonder how that part works.
Yeah, how's the logistics? Yeah, that's a good point. So it does change from situation to situation. And we've had a number of experiences in the last few years where, you know, we harvested an alpine bison. So not an alpine bison, but a bison in the alpine. And so that sets sort of a little bit more of a tricky situation with getting the kids right up there. But the odd time, you know, they are still down low. And so the students are set back from the shooter, you know, a little ways. But even when they were up, you know, we're up in the alpine as sort of the team that goes up to harvest, they're watching through spotting scopes and through binoculars. And so they see the whole stalk, I guess, if you will, right from when we get off the snow machines and start kind of hiking slowly up the mountain. Or if, you know, it's down in a meadow somewhere, they're kind of on the brush line and the hunters might kind of creep forward slowly over 20, 30 minutes and kind of find an animal that's off from, you know, the herd and, okay, that looks like the one that we're going to try to harvest and target on and wait for the, you know, a good shot opportunity. So yeah, logistically they're not right at the forefront there. And sometimes we do break off and say, okay, well, we're not finding them or we see some tracks going this way and tracks going that way. And we'll send a group that goes into this valley and a group that goes up that valley. But typically we stay as a cohesive group. And one of the most amazing things, and I always laugh when I talk about this because it has taught me so much about hunting, being around such a large, noisy group of people, is that I've really started to hunt really slow and to look more than I walk or to look more than I move. And it's sort of a necessity when we take the students out because they are a big group and you've got, you know, a bunch of people walking around with their snowsuits on. And so there's a visual kind of giveaway, but then also the noise that just comes with, you know, multiple snow machines and multiple people talking. And you can't control everybody's voice. So some people yelling and they're excited and look at what this flying squirrel just leapt across this field. And, so you get that. But we have a really high rate of success on these trips. And I think you can attribute that to the fact that you just have to slow down and you have to look and sense more what's going on around you. And so we'll hike the kids up onto a bluff and we'll glass across a valley and we'll tell them, you know, skills like what you develop over, you know, decades of hunting experience. So don't just look for a big animal out in the open, like look for a horn or look for a leg or look for a little tail flicking behind a bush. And we'll be sitting there and we'll stop and we move and stop and move and stop. And so many times we'll be sitting there quietly for 30, 40 minutes and, you know, kids are talking, whatever. And then all of a sudden you hear a student, I think I see one. And then, you know, people kind of rush over and everybody kind of starts looking through their spotting scope. And sure enough, there's a bull that was standing behind a 7-foot tall spruce tree not even a big, you know, bush, and just moved its vantage a little, or, you know, your vantage changes, the animal moves a little bit, and there it is. And we've had success because of students spotting animals where they've been staring at a mountainside for 2-3 hours. And then all of a sudden, I think I see one, you know? And so something emerges, and it's like, so they learn patience, you know, and persistence. And those are, you know, invaluable qualities. But then we also see this amazing thing where, because the core range of the bison herd that you can hunt in the Yukon is fairly limited, and access for anything in the Yukon is fairly limited, there's these sort of choke points where everybody kind of comes in and out. And I think on 3 or 4 different occasions, we've had hunters driving out, and we have this, you know, train of snow machines with students on, and a lot of people are great. You know, they're, hey, how's it going? So good to see you guys out here. People have brought us KFC from town and stuff. Like, they love the program. They drop in, they high five everybody. We brought you food, or we brought you some treats. And that's great. But then the odd time you get like a hunting party of some, you know, hardcore guys, and they're coming out, and they're all decked out in their $30,000 kit and brand new sled and brand new skimmer and Sitka suit, and everything's all tip top. And they're like, there's no bison around here. There's too many people. And we're like, okay. All right. Well, yeah, good seeing you guys.
There's one up there that's behind that 7-foot spruce tree.
right behind them. Like, we're looking at a herd of bison right behind them on the horizon. And it's just like, yep, yeah, okay, guys. Well, better luck next time. And they head out, and we go in, and off we go up the mountain, and then end up harvesting one.
Gosh, there's another lesson there, right there, right?
Yeah, the lesson there is like, slow down, you know, and really take in the world around you. And I think that just goes through all walks of life. But, you know, as a hunter, what I've learned from that is that, you know, there's a value to looking more and sensing more and moving less if you can. And, you know, it's not always the case. Like, sometimes, you know, the animals are in a different basin or a different valley, and you just have to move. But it teaches you that, you know, you really have to look hard, because there's more animals there than you think there are. And especially with bison, I mean, they occupy all different habitats in the Yukon. So they're down low on these sort of frozen lakes and marshes. They're in the thick stuff, so they're in the timber and sort of overgrown boreal forest, which can be very hard to look into. And then they're right to the top. And I mean, skylined on the top of a mountain, like where you'd expect to see sheep. So, you know, again, it kind of teaches you to break the mold of what you think you know. But I always get a kick out of that so many times, you know, we've been kind of on the path and past somebody, and it just kind of goes to show you, like, yeah, you just need to slow down. They move so far when they're bison hunting. You know, I covered 400 kilometers today on my sled. And it's like, well, did you see a squirrel even on that 400 kilometers?
You probably drove by four herds in that 400 kilometers.
Yeah. And I mean, and the other amazing thing about these animals is they're reintroduced. So when they were first reintroduced in the 80s and 90s, they were fairly unaware of people. So they were in, you know, maternal penning areas, and they kind of, the population increased, they were released, they were put on a permit hunt, so a limited entry hunt. And so people slowly started to harvest, and the animals slowly started to learn, you know, what people are as potential predators. And now if they hear a snow machine, like, they're gone. They're in the next valley, and they can move fast. Like, people always ask, you know, how fast can a bison move? Well, they move pretty slow until they don't. And then they move really quick. And even in deep snow, like, they plow through. And so these animals can quickly get out of the way. And whether they're up high and they sneak down low, or they're down low and they sneak into a ravine or, you know, a basin that you can't see into. And so that teaches you, you know, to get off your machine and kind of do it with the human power element, right? So bring skis, bring snowshoes, cut a track, kill your machine, and go walk for a little ways. And don't just putz around kind of looking, like, expecting to find one out in the open. So, you know, again, it kind of teaches you this life lesson, these valuable skills. But then also as a hunter, you're kind of reminded, like, oh, yeah, okay. Like, I shouldn't always just be ramped up and trying to go as far as I can and look into the next mountain.
High grade the landscape, yeah. And yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, the way that I've kind of taken that is I will spend a lot of time looking, like, picking things apart, and then I'll look up and kind of do a clean sweep of, like, yeah, the real obvious open habitat, and just double check if anything's been moving while I'm not looking in that direction. But yeah, I think it's so valuable. And these kids learn that from like such a young age. Like, I don't think they realize the benefit that they're getting as young students to kind of distill. Like, sometimes it takes years to learn this stuff as an individual.
Or a lifetime.
Especially if you don't have a mentor. Yeah, lifetime. And so they've got this team of leaders and volunteers that all have experience, and they all bring something to the table. And so they're learning little bits from all of them, but then they're also learning from their own experience. And so, you know, a week on the land on this bison hunt is like 5 years or 10 years of hunting experience for most people, just because of who you're around and what you're doing.
Yeah. Wow. Jeez. That's so exciting. So yeah. Just to kind of capstone sort of question here to the show. Mm-hmm. For Steve as a person, a hunter, how important is it to you to be part of this program to help these kids when you could go, you know what, if I didn't, I could have this time to myself and I could be out there doing things for me. How important is it to you, to your soul, to be part of this?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's a hard thing to articulate, but the way I'll put it is, you know, I will volunteer for this program until they won't have me anymore. it is something I cherish and I look forward to every year. You know, and I, as soon as the snow starts flying and I know that, you know, bison season's around the corner, it's like, I'll go bison hunting all year and not harvest an animal just because I want to be kind of on this trip. And I know that, you know, I get that satisfaction of not only being on a successful harvest, but also just being on a trip that's so meaningful. And so I really do look forward to it. You know, as soon as the week ends on the land with the students, I'm already dreaming about the next year. But, you know, to me as an individual, I think it's changed who I am to be able to partake in an activity like this, and to learn not only from my peers, you know, the other leaders and volunteers and teachers, but to learn from the kids. You know, you just take away so many realizations in this setting that you can't get them anywhere else, you know? And it's such a real lived experience that, you know, it's really, really hard to get that level of satisfaction and kind of just being happy with who you are. You know, it really does fill your soul. And so at the risk of sounding a little cliche, I mean, it's something that I think is irreplaceable. Yeah. And for me, you know, I'll volunteer until I can't walk and hike anymore. And I hope my kids get to do it. So it's something, again, you know, I'll circle back to, like, if anybody ever listens to this podcast and they're a decision maker as to whether these programs should move forward in the Yukon or outside, don't ever stop implementing these programs because they're so valuable.
Or if you're thinking about it as an educator somewhere in this country, like, here's the reasons why, here's the values behind it. If you need to justify it to a school board or something, right? Like, it's,
just find a way to make it work.
No, that's a good message.
Because it really is worth it. And I know the teachers, you know, they go through a stack of paperwork that grows every year. And it's hard, you know, they have a lot of responsibility and it's stressful, but you see, you know, the outcome of, a trip, whether it's successful in harvesting or not. And you see how everybody is just kind of elated at the end of it. And they're just kind of glowing. And it's like, well, it's worth it. It's worth it. We got to keep doing it. And I think, like you're saying, for other teachers or other boards that may be listening in other jurisdictions, like, seriously consider implementing a program like this somewhere, because it is worth all of the time and all of the effort that goes into it. And the students, what they take out of it, you just can't put into words. It really is an invaluable program.
Wow. Thanks for that. Well, we'll do a little extra work and maybe get this show in front of some educators, like, you know, put some extra hashtags or something on it, or get it into the education circle. So people hear your story. I can just see just in your face, like how important this is to you. And it's not about you and the benefit, you know, like you're not the one doing all these great mm-hmm. things, but you're seeing it in these kids. And this is happening. This life experience is happening in the context of hunting. And that is probably not replicatable in any other type of program. And I love how excited you are about it. It just makes me excited too, to maybe want to come up there and see it one day and just as an observer, watch all these things that you talked about. So Steve, thanks so much for sharing this experience with us and all of our listeners. This is just such a unique and wonderful thing. It's I just been waiting for a long time to hear this story from you. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on and letting me share my piece, and hopefully it inspired somebody to do some change and implement something similar in their area.
Well, there you go. And here's the expert that can help you get a program in place.
Yes. Yeah. Reach out anytime.
Steve, thanks very much.
Thanks, Mark.